This is Glenn Gould, and this program is about Leopold Stokowski. When I was a teenager, back in the 40s, Stokowski shared for some years the podium of the New York Philharmonic. His co-director was the late Dimitri Mitropoulos, and together they contributed to that memorable Sunday afternoon series on CBS Radio, which is one of the few redeeming features of American broadcasting in the years after World War II. Running opposite the Stokowski-Mitropoulos programs on CBS was NBC's entry in the Symphonic Sweepstakes, a series featuring the orchestra which bore the network's name and which was created for and conducted by Arturo Toscanini. The attitude of the young people of my generation toward these weekend music specials was rather interesting. It was generally bruited about by my conservatory colleagues that you were either a Stokowski fan or a Toscanini devotee. There was apparently no middle ground, except perhaps that which was occasionally occupied by Bruno Walter. According to the academic banter of that time, Toscanini embodied most progressive musical virtues. His performances were direct, straightforward, and emotionally objective. Whichever notes, dynamic marks, or tempo indications appeared before him in the score were, to the best of his and the NBC orchestra's ability, what you heard. For Toscanini, the composer's notational suggestions were gospel. Not so with Stokowski. He was, and is, for want of a better word, an ecstatic. Stokowski is involved with the notes, the tempo marks, the dynamic indications of a score, to the same extent that a filmmaker is involved with the original book or source which supplies the impetus, the idea for his film. So Stokowski's performances then stand or fall by the degree to which he can infuse them with a sense of his own commitment to the project at hand. And happily for those of us who became addicted to his way of making music, there's rarely been a more committed, more imaginative, more resourceful artist than Leopold Stokowski. There was, however, another reason for the disrepute into which some of Stokowski's interpretive ideas had fallen in those years, besides that penchant for a neo-literalist performing style which the young people of my generation espoused. He was, after all, not only a popularizer, a man who thought nothing of transforming the keyboard works of Bach into massive orchestral statements, but more than that, he was a film personality. In the mid-1930s, he'd relinquished his post as conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, in which he single-handedly transformed the standards of orchestral playing in North America, in order to join Diana Durbin and Donald Duck on the silver screen in Hollywood. "I go to a higher calling," he was reported to have said to the press conference, which was called to announce his departure, and if one can filter out the inevitable quotient of defensiveness which may be assumed to infiltrate a remark of that kind, it was a remarkably revealing comment. Technology, for Stokowski, was a higher calling. He was indeed the first great musician to realize that the future of music would be inextricably bound up with technological progress, and that the communications media were, in fact, the best friend that music ever had. Many of his recordings, in all of which, as I know from personal experience, he maintains a firm hand in relation to the processes of production, were years ahead of their time, sonically. But the real benefit of his interest in technology, I think, was that it enabled Stokowski to resist the inhibitions induced by those pre-technological attitudes toward music making, which created the stratified roles of performer, listener, and composer, and which held that those roles must forever remain separate and distinct. For Stokowski, I think, such distinctions are themselves the single greatest danger which the artist must face, and I suspect that the key to the enormous appeal of his music making over the past 60 years or so is precisely his realization of that fact, and his willingness to act upon the assumptions that follow from it. Stokowski is 88 now, or at least he was when I interviewed him for this program. Nothing in his manner, his outlook, or the vitality of his music-making suggests the incipient nonagenarian, but it's perhaps useful to recall that Stokowski was born while Wagner was still alive, and that when Brahms died, Stokowski was himself already a teenager. In theory, his outlook and his art should represent the aesthetic attitudes of a bygone era, or eras. But in fact, because of his extraordinary warmth and humility, his remarkable receptivity to new ideas, and above all, because in his lifetime we've already seen not only the triumph, but the essential humanity of those technological ideas which have informed all of his work as a musician, Leopold Stokowski is very much a man of the future.